and not necessarily those of Morgan State University, the staff, management, or underwriters of Baltimore's home for cool jazz. WEAA 88.9 FM.
Welcome to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead here again to talk with you about some of the stories that matter. I love these type of days. This is a day when we do our weekly wrap, when we tell you to pull up a chair to the kitchen table and tell us what you've been talking about while you've been doing your commuting with your children, while you've been sitting around the kitchen table at home, while you've been standing around the water cooler at work. No topic is off the table today. It's the weekly wrap. Just give us a call, 410-319-8888, and we can talk about anything that is taking your attention. Here are a couple of possible topics, things I've been thinking about. One is that, I'm not sure if you know, that the tennis umpires are now talking about boycotting Serena's games because they say they're not getting the support they need. So we can talk about that. A study came out that showed that 38% of working Marylanders and nearly half of Baltimoreans cannot afford basic household necessities. I'm going to go ahead and put that on the table. Another topic that might be very interesting is that Black students who are interested in racial justice are more likely to be ignored by white admissions counselors, something I'm thinking about because I'm getting my son ready for college. It's the weekly wrap. No issue is off the table. You want to talk about corporal punishment? They're looking at spanking your children in school. We can talk about that. And we can go through these issues one by one. 410-319-8888. We'll go ahead and open up the phones. It's the kitchen table, which means, just to remind people if they're new to the game here, during the days we have our weekly wrap, this is the day when the audience drives the show. On most days of the week, 4 of the 5 days that this show is on during the week, Justina, my award-winning producer, and I, we go through and we set the topics, we go back and forth, we spend time debating it, we get all the research, I do the work, I do the study, and I bring those topics to you for discussion. And then there's one day out of the week, one day that belongs completely to the audience. You decide what you want to talk to. It's the kitchen table. Now, I don't position myself as the expert on every topic, so let's talk about it. It's kind of like what you do at home. When I'm sitting at home and I'm having dinner with my husband and my boys, I don't come with an agenda, although I would like to, right? I would like to come to the kitchen table with my teenage sons and have an agenda for topics. I want to know where you've been, who you're dating, what your life plans are. I would like to do research, but that's not what we do. We come together as a family, and whatever we talk about, the conversation just gets going. Sometimes we're laughing, sometimes we're arguing, but it's the kitchen table. That is the whole purpose of the weekly wrap. 410-319-8888. What have you been talking about? I also want to invite you, the folks who are on our Facebook Live and our Facebook fan page, the first thing I'd like you to do is please share the video so that other people can join the conversation. And of course, get the conversation going on Facebook Live and Facebook Video, and I will share them here. As you're thinking about what you want to talk about, let me just talk about what today is. On this day in history, Dr. Mae Carroll Jemison was an engineer, physician, NASA astronaut, and she was the first African-American woman to travel in space aboard the Space Shuttle Endeavour on September 12, 1992. Dr. Mae Jemison. I remember her. She spoke at my university, at my graduation at Lincoln University in Pennsylvania. I remember how proud I was about the work that she was doing. She served in the Peace Corps from 1985 to 1987. Now, she resigned from NASA in 1993 to found a company researching the application of technology to daily life. So people think about technology, they don't typically think about Black women. So before you think about, I don't know, Mark Zuckerberg, before you think about Steve Jobs, think about Dr. Mae Carroll Jemison, engineer, physician, NASA astronaut, standing on the shoulders of all of our hidden figures. I want to play a quick clip from Dr. Mae Jemison to encourage any young woman who's listening to the show, whether you are 7 years old or 17 years old, Dr. Jemison paved the way for you. Let's take a listen to it.
For me, the experience was one that made me feel very connected with the universe. I felt that my being was as much a part of this universe as any star, as any comet. It helped me to recognize that right now, we're in space. This Earth is part of that universe. That was my grand connection. And then I looked down and I saw Chicago. I thought about the little girl who had assumed she would go into space. What would my younger self have thought if she met me? And I think she would have been tickled.
Think about that. That was Dr. Mae Carroll Jemison, Black woman, engineer, physician, NASA astronaut, the first Black woman to travel in space. I love that idea. What would my younger self have thought about me? So young sisters who are out there and you're thinking about where your place is in this country, I want you to think bigger than the borders of this country. I want you to think bigger than this planet. Think of this entire universe as a place that you can explore. You could be the next Black woman to take us to the next place we need to go, the next Hispanic woman or the Asian woman or the white woman to take us where we need to go. I used to love watching only one scene whenever it came on Star Trek. Whenever the universe would call, there'd be a Black woman, Uhuru, who would answer the call. I love the fact that no matter where people were in the universe, when they're calling, it was a Black woman who was answering the call. Today is also the day that James Cleveland Owens, Jesse Owens, was born September 12, 1913. He was an American track and field athlete, four-time Olympic gold medalist in the 1936 Games. He participated by winning four gold medals in the 100 meters, the 200 meters, the long jump, and the 4x100-meter relay. He was the most successful athlete at the Games, and as a Black man, was credited with single-handedly crushing Hitler's myth of Aryan supremacy. So that's how you crush white supremacy, Aryan supremacy, the white man's supremacy. So you show up and you dominate and you do your work to the highest level. Let's take a quick listen of a very rare interview with Jesse Owens, and then we're going to get this conversation going.
I think that everybody should have a dream of where he wishes to go. And then you begin to set about how to reach that dream. I've listened to it athletically from my coaches. I heard from it from my junior high school coach when I was 13 years old, and I think that it holds true today, not only in athletics, but in our everyday walk of life in which we live. I think that we must have a dream, and dreaming about these things, you have to have enough dedication to it, enough determination. There must be discipline, self-discipline within it, and sacrifices to be made, and then too, I think it's the attitude in which one assumes in being able to reach that dream. Mm-hmm.
Jesse Owens, today is his birthday. I just want to ask every young person who's listening, because I know we have a lot of parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles who during the afternoon commute, you have this radio on, your babies are listening. I'm just asking you, do you have a dream for where you want to go? Who do you want to be in the world? There are no limitations. We are at a time now when you do not have to be limited by who they say that you are. You can be whoever you want to be. And Jesse Owens talked about having self-discipline, being willing to sacrifice, and then having the attitude that will take you as far as you want to go. We want to invite you, young people, give us a call. Join the conversation. 410-319-8888. What have you been talking about at school? You've been in school every day this week. You've lasted all day. I'm thankful for that. But do know we haven't forgotten your needs. We haven't forgotten that your conditions are ideal. We haven't forgotten that your teachers still need supplies, which is why we still have our school depot. It is open and ready for business. Any teacher can come to the school depot. Just show your ID. Give us a call. Make an appointment. We have toilet paper for you. We have paper towels. We have hand sanitizer. We have bottled water for you. Everything you need, because we as a community have decided that no child in this city will go without the basic needs that they are in need of to get through a city school day. We're going to keep doing that. 410-319-8888. What have you been talking about around your kitchen table? We have Barbara on the line. Barbara, welcome to the kitchen table. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I'm gonna speak on children.
Yes.
Being a single mom and investing in education. I was committed and dedicated to my children and their education. And one is a 4.0 engineer at Pikeville, and the other is a 4.0 in art. I am going to speak on a single parent committing herself. And at some point or another, I don't know if we're going to put it on racism or if we're going to put it on a single parent that is ambitious and the breadwinner. I, at some point, realized, and my son, who graduated in 2012 at Dunbarton Middle in Towson, a prestigious school, international school, very beautiful, number one in his class.
Yes.
At some point or another, I don't know who intervened, if it was the government or the college board, or I'm not sure, I'm confused, mm-hmm. but he was stopped, as well as my daughter. They both were stopped, and I'm not sure if it's because he was number one out of international all races, such a very beautiful graduation,
right?
Or is it that they do not expect such expectations out of a single mom.
Right.
So I'm going to open it up and let you all give me your opinion on what you think took place there.
Okay, so now let me just be clear that I understand. 4.0, your daughter's also doing really well. He was stopped how? He was stopped by the cops? He was stopped in the process of graduating? Like, where and how was he stopped?
At some point or another, after his graduation and attending high school, mm-hmm. we were starting to be ignored by our school board of education, our counselors,
right.
and we were put in a category almost as if they were segregating in a way of we're going to set you back and start you over. We do not expect, we are Caucasians, but we look, you may not be able to look at us and tell.
Okay.
However, we were put in a segregated situation where you have to slow up. We were stopped, and it was not a way, in a way where you had to guess. They put it right there in front of our faces.
Okay.
As if they did not expect a single parent to be, you know, children of a
right.
single parent
to be able to succeed and to compete, even though he's now holding a 4.0 as an engineering student, correct?
That is very correct. And if you will all get a chance and you can speak on it.
We are.
Through at Dunbarton and Towson and Rogersport, 2012, I believe it was June the 6th. It was such a beautiful graduation, at least 150 kids of all different races. And he was number one. They put it in his report card
right.
in the office the day before. That's what I'm trying to tell you. They didn't even want to give out certificates at
okay.
the graduation. They sneaked it in his report card in the office.
To note that he was number one.
They knew he was number one, and at Abingdon Elementary in Harford County, my daughter was number one. She read out of the third graders, number one, and they did not give her a certificate. Her teacher was very nice to tell me, we don't know if you're going to get it. We can't say, but your daughter outread all third graders. I never received a certificate, and it is almost like we're being segregated. We
okay.
did not expect it from you, and their transcripts are being stolen. So we want to open up the poll and see what other parts.
Okay.
Or if
no problem. All right. Okay. Thank you so much, Barbara. So, folks, Barbara has put on the table, are folks dealing with the situation as a single mom? Do you find that the school system is not giving you the support that you're looking for? Barbara said she does racially self-identify as white, even though she said by looking at her, you cannot tell. So I'm not sure if it's a race issue. Barbara thinks it may be because she's a single mother. But if anyone else has had that situation where you feel that your children are being discriminated against because you are a single parent, mother or father, give us a call. Maybe you can get Barbara some solutions. We have James on the phone from West Baltimore. James, how are you? What you been talking about?
Yeah, hey, how you doing, Dr. K?
I'm doing well.
I want to talk about this youth violence out here.
Okay.
how the youth is preying on the old people.
Mm-hmm.
They beat another elderly lady up on the bus. You seen that?
I saw that. Someone shared that with me earlier. I didn't watch the whole thing, though.
Have you spoken on this yet?
No, we haven't, so please. No, please.
I mean, have you spoken on teen violence yet since you've been on
the
air?
Oh, no, we've talked about teen violence a lot. What we haven't spoke about is exactly the situation you mentioned, teen violence toward the elderly. We have not delved deep into that.
It's so important because what's happening, I think the older people are under attack. Mm. And we need to speak out. We need to speak out and protect the elderly.
I agree.
Because right now, these young people don't have no respect for nobody. They killing old people. They beating old people up. We can't allow these children. I don't know what they not the same youth as they used to be.
Well, let me ask you this, because I know that it's happening. We know there's a lot of things going on. What would you suggest, James, that we do? So do we do more mentoring programs? Should we try to intervene in the schools? Like, what do you suggest that we do to stop the cycle of violence that you are seeing and you're bringing up to the table that young people are involved in as it pertains particularly to one of our most vulnerable populations, which is our elderly?
Now, listen, how do you deal with a child? Is not afraid of his parents.
Mm.
How you deal with a child that's not afraid of the police?
Well, I mean,
you tell me how you deal with this child. Yeah. These children, they don't have no fear of nothing.
Right, some of them don't.
Now, we feared our parents.
Right.
These children don't. I'm working down near the high school. It looked like half the school is sitting on the neighborhood porch. They're not even going to school. They're cutting out of class sitting in the neighborhood. If you go out there and say something to them, they'll curse you out.
Right.
It's a mad case of insanity going on.
So that's something we have to deal with. It. I'm putting it down here. Youth violence, what do we do? What do we do?
We talk about it, Dr. Case. We can't avoid it.
Yeah, no, and we're putting it on the kitchen table. Youth violence. Thank you so much, James, folks. James has put down youth violence. Now, what is interesting is that when we start talking about the ways in which our youth are involved in these violent activities and we're trying to come up with solutions, James is saying if they're not afraid of their parents, if they're not afraid of the cops, they're definitely not afraid of their teachers and their principals, then what do we do? How do we reach them? I'm not willing to say that fear is the only motivating factor here. There's got to be other ways that we use. I know a number of you do counseling programs and mentoring programs. So how do we reach the youth? We are also sitting on the fact that here in Baltimore City, we've had 202 homicides, and that's the number as of early this morning. So there's violence happening in the city across the board. But drilling down into the youth, I will not agree with James and say all of the youth this and all of the youth that. I will say that there's some. Some we have to work a little bit harder to reach. We cannot write all of them off because I'm raising two teenagers. So when you say all means all. Some of them. And maybe it's the ones that James knows and has come in contact with. Let's talk about it. 410-319-8888. The kitchen table is open. Pull up a chair. Let's talk about it. We have Maxwell on the phone from West Baltimore. Maxwell, how are you?
I'm fine, Dr. Terry.
Thank you for calling.
I'd like to return to the subject of the black woman in the transition of a boy to a man.
Yes.
Talked about that last week.
Yes, we did.
Well, there is a book out by Francis Cress Wealthy called The Isis Statement. And in that book, she clearly delineates.
Hold on one second. Your phone seems to be messed up. Hold on, Maxwell. Let them fix your phone. Andre, can you take Maxwell's phone offline and fix it? Okay, we're going to try to fix Maxwell's line, and then we'll pull him out. But he was bringing up a book. It's not a new book. It's an older book by Dr. Frances Cress Wellesley. It's an older book called The Isis Papers. And in that, she does clearly talk about the roles of parents, mothers and fathers, the roles of who's involved with the lives of the children. I want to bring up something that Patricia Clark put up. Patricia Clark puts up on Facebook Live, the last time a group of kids attacked an elderly man, one of them were shot by him. They vandalized his car multiple times. He called the police a number of times until he got tired and killed one of them. She threw that out. Youth violence. 410-319-8888. What are you talking about around your kitchen table? I'm going to throw some topics out here before I go to the next call. I was reading this study. It just came out. 38% of working Marylanders, nearly half of the folks here in Baltimore, cannot afford basic household necessities. I want to note that the minimum wage rate in Baltimore is $10.10 an hour. And remember when our mayor was actually, she was campaigning on raising that to $15. That has not happened. The poverty line, the way we're looking at it right now in Baltimore City, 34% of the children in Baltimore City live below the poverty line. What's that line? $23,850 for a family of four. That was in 2014. That is the poverty line. The median income for households in Baltimore City is $41,000. So our median income is above what the poverty line is, and yet almost 35% of our children live below the poverty line. We have to talk about that because Maryland is the richest state in the United States of America with a median household of $69,000. And yet we're suffering here in Baltimore City where people can't afford basic necessities, which is classified as housing, transportation, food, and child care. Half the people here in Baltimore are part of what they call the working poor and cannot afford housing, transportation, food, and child care. 410-319-8888. What are you talking about around your kitchen table? We have Lauren on the phone. Lauren's a new caller from Baltimore. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. Thank you for calling.
I wanted to talk about the youth violence a little bit and make a way that you get the kids in school a little bit more.
Okay.
I think that it's really important that, like you said, we do not, like, subject and say that this is all kids. I think that that makes a negative impact and kind of brings kids down and will only feed more negativity. I think one of the biggest things is maybe talking to kids about small steps to sustain, like, their own futures and their own sense of happiness, whether it be big or small, but just like starting from little tiny things. I think in this city, a lot of people lose hope really easily because of all the bad things that are happening.
Right.
But I don't know, this violence with the kids is really, really terrible. And it is something that I think has been carried on for a long time. I used to live in New Orleans. It's the same exact narrative there. And I think one of the biggest things is giving these kids some hope, giving these kids something to look forward to, and also talking to other kids and saying, hey, if you ever hear kids talking about this type of thing, don't be afraid to speak up to teachers, counselors about things that they hear that are going to happen, or maybe they're afraid of what another kid's going to do, or they're...
So do you think, well, let me ask you this, Lauren, because I was looking at one possible solution is that solution that came out of Georgia where they're bringing back corporal punishment to the school. They're going to paddle kids from first grade to ninth grade. Do you think that maybe adding some discipline into the school in that particular way, which is really radical, do you think that's an answer?
I personally don't. I think that our school systems just kind of run backwards. I remember being in school, and if you're bad, you get kicked out.
Right.
I don't think that really makes any sense. Like, if you're bad, then I think that you should be structured some more and maybe be sent to a different class, be sent to a different area of the school. But to be sent home, I don't know. Then you're losing that education. You're losing the point of being there, and then you have a lot more time to do bad things. So.
All right. I appreciate you calling, Lauren. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
folks, we're going to leave it here for just a second. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. When we come back, I want to put two things out there. What do you think about tennis umpires who are actually considering boycotting Serena Williams matches, right? So you have a white man exercising his privilege, getting into the thing with the black woman. The response is they're going to boycott her matches. I also want to talk about spanking in schools. I just want to investigate that for a second. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Stay with us.
This is WEAA News Director Julius White. Here are some of the things you and your family can do to be ready for possible impacts from Hurricane Florence. Make sure you have food and water for at least 3 days. Stock it with food items that are non-perishable. A gallon of water per person per day is recommended. Have flashlights and batteries, toilet paper, soap and sanitizing wipes, a can opener, first aid supplies, spare eyeglasses, prescriptions, and extra medication, and necessary equipment or devices. Pet supplies.
Have a radio, especially one that runs on batteries or a hand crank. Next, make a plan. Gather phone numbers. Write out contact information for workplaces, schools, doctors, insurance, and other important numbers, and keep it in your kit. Create backups of your important documents or files and store them in a secure, waterproof place. And, of course, stay informed. Stay with us at WEAA 88.9 FM for the very latest in severe weather information.
Join Robert Shaheed as he shares the powerful elements that is music and its history on Masterclass, Monday through Friday at noon. You don't want to miss this culinary feast for your ears, only on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
Listen live to your favorite public radio station. Streaming now at WEAA.org.
Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Folks, it's Wednesday. It's time for the weekly wrap. Pull up a chair to the kitchen table. Tell me what you've been talking about, and let's kind of unpack it together. What is interesting is that a story came out earlier this week, and my colleague Anthony McCarthy, who covered for Faraji Muhammad last night on For the Culture, covered this extensively for 2 hours. Folks, I was listening in my car. I could not get out of my car listening to people talk about this school in Georgia that's reinstating paddling to punish students. Now, we didn't want to do that topic today because I know you exhausted it yesterday, but I was so frustrated listening to one parent after the other saying things like, well, I've spanked my daughter and I put the fear of God in her so she would never do anything. And I spanked my son so much he would never disobey. So now we're talking about approving the spanking at home and then having the spanking taking place outside of the home. Let me just give you an update because I have a special guest who's going to help us to understand this. So this school that's in Georgia is the Georgia School of Innovation and the Classics. It's a kindergarten through ninth grade charter school. They're bringing back paddling, spanking a child on the behind with a wooden board. And they have sent home a form to the parents asking for permission to do this. And if you don't get permission for the paddling, then your child will get, I think, 5 days of suspension. Listen to this, folks. The paddle is 24 inches in length, 6 inches in width, and 3/4 inches in thickness. And if your child is paddled by this principal, who is a Caucasian man, his plan is to take your child into the office, close the door, have your child place their hands on their knees or on a piece of furniture after they have pull down their pants if they're a boy or pull up their skirt if they're a girl. They want to go straight from just underwear to skin. It's a tool in the disciplinary toolbox, and the teacher and principals walking around with these paddles is a way to keep children in line. I was horrified, people. And I know someone who does this kind of work, and I went directly to her. Dr. Stacy Patton is also the author of Spare the Kids, Why Whooping Children Won't Save Black America. She is a professor here at Morgan State University, and she's also the author of the memoir That Mean Old Yesterday. Many of you know Stacy, you follow her online, but this is a work that is particularly close to her heart. And so I wanted to get her to chime in. Dr. Stacy, how are you?
I'm good, Dr. K. How are you doing?
I'm fine. I'm so thankful that you were able to take some time out of your day and call in because, you know, I contacted you so upset about after reading this and after hearing people on the air and hearing all the support for spanking children, you know, spanking them till they have the what people said. And I heard this a couple of times, quote, the fear of God in them, which was a line that a father used for the way he said he spanked his daughter got in trouble. He said he spanked her at the school because the school gave him a room. He spanked her when she got home, and he spanked her again before she went to bed. He said she never acted up again all the way through graduation because he put the fear of God in her, and that he's in support of maybe having principals begin to spank our children. I just wanted to have you weigh in just about what is the impact of spanking our child, and then extending this, of course, to the spanking potentially in the schools?
Well, I'm glad you're, first of all, having this conversation. And it's clear a lot of us haven't left the plantation. And it's so disturbing but not surprising to hear about this school in Georgia bringing back paddling. I have a whole chapter in Spare the Kids where I talk about corporal punishment in schools. A lot of people don't realize that there are 18 states, primarily in the South, where a disproportionate number of black children attend these schools, where it is legal to paddle students with wooden boards. Corporal punishment is legal in every state in terms of for kids who attend private and charter schools. Every state except Iowa and New Jersey.
So, that means Maryland too, then.
Yes, in charter and private schools, it's legal. So a lot of people don't realize.
No,
that.
I did
so
not realize that.
Yes. So, but in public schools, it's just the 18 states. And if you put those 18 states on a map and you highlight them in red, and you put another map of the states that had the most number of lynchings in the South, they match up. So you have one form of social control that was primarily used against black folks being replaced by another form of control, which is paddling, corporal punishment in schools. And the Office of Civil Rights, has investigated this. Human Rights Watch has investigated this type of punishment. And the disproportionate number of kids who are paddled in schools are children with disabilities and children of color. And the interesting thing about it is a lot of people assume that it's interracial hitting that's going on, that black kids are primarily being hit by white teachers and white principals, but that's not actually true. Much of the paddling is intra-racial, so white teachers and principals hitting white students, black students being hit by black teachers and black principals, because the schools are so segregated.
Right.
So it's not this cross-racial thing. And then you have parents who sign opt-in forms and say, you know, go ahead and hit my kids. And even parents who opt out, that opt-out form doesn't always protect their kid from being assaulted with one of these boards. And many districts also have something called an immunity clause. So if a teacher, coach, principal injures a child while in the course of administering one of these beatings, whether it's bruising them, breaking blood vessels, there's a famous case of one kid who fell and cracked his head while he was being hit by a principal, and this principal was protected by the immunity clause, so there were no criminal charges against this administrator because he was administering the punishment while acting out his duty. But a parent who leaves bruises or marks on their kid for doing this at home can be placed in jail. The other thing that really bothers me about this is that schools, teachers, principals, anybody who works at a school is considered a mandated reporter. So you must report child abuse, any suspicions of child abuse, but yet you put paddles in the hands of these same people who are mandated to be, reporters. And so a lot of studies, some studies have been done on corporal punishment in schools show that generally this is the first step in the school-to-prison pipeline.
Mm.
You have a kid who gets hit, it can mess with their self-esteem. It messes up the, classroom environment. Schools are supposed to prepare children for good citizenship, critical thinking, logic and reasoning, communication, conflict resolution. But these people who are supposed to be doing the teaching are using violence as a way to communicate with young people. So what does that teach, these students? So it's really a problematic. And there are a lot of districts, primarily in the South, primarily in, these districts that are underfunded, under-resourced, crowded classrooms, to traumatized communities. This seems to be the way that they want to deal with these issues, by subjecting young people to more trauma and violence. It makes absolutely no sense.
Well, let me ask you this, Stacey, because, you know, we have this conversation all the time, not just you and I, but in the community. We're always talking about spanking. And one of the arguments that I hear people say, well, it happened to me and I turned out okay.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you respond to that, saying, well, you know what, my parents spanked me and I'm doing perfectly fine, so I'm going to do the same thing with my child. It kept me in line.
That statement right there proves that you're not okay.
Mm.
Because we have science, 50 years worth of scientific research that has looked at the impact of spanking on brain development. And, you know, I have people who say, oh, there's a difference between spanking a child and beating and whooping and abusing a child. No, there isn't. It's just the spelling that's different. All of it is violence. All of it involves hitting and pain and coercion and fear. And what happens to a child's developing brain and body is that they receive biofeedback, no matter what the parent calls it, no matter what the intent is. When you hit a child, I don't care if it's with an open hand or an object, you trigger certain neurochemicals that, you know, surge through the body, cortisol, oxytocin, and so on. And so if you keep subjecting your child's body to this kind of chronic stress, it can have impact on their IQ. It can lay the foundation for drug abuse, alcoholism, aggressive behavior, their cognitive skills, emotional regulation. It can trigger early puberty, particularly in girls. Precocious sexual behavior in children as well. Even if they make it through childhood without any of those issues, later on we look at things like heart disease, obesity, diabetes, cancer, arthritis, those sorts of things. There's plenty of science on epigenetics and adverse childhood experiences that show up later on in life. And many psychologists have done research on the impact that witnessing domestic violence, so a father hitting a mother or vice versa, when young people experience adults hitting each other, it has a psychological impact on them. And it's and generally, folks say, that was a bad kind of domestic violence for me to witness. But spanking, being hit by an adult, many people invert that violence into something good, because as the brain is growing, it takes the messages of pain and love, and they converge in the prefrontal cortex of the brain. And so love and pain merge together and get experienced as a biological process and then rationalized as love.
Well, this is so disturbing. I'm so glad that you were able to speak to us, Dr. Stacey. I was so upset yesterday after hearing some of the comments, because I thought we as a community, and I'm not talking about Baltimore City as a whole, I'm really talking about the Black community, with the ways in which we have dealt with and we've overcome so many obstacles, from American enslavement to Jim Crow, we're dealing with Black Lives Matter now, that the worst thing we can do is continue to inflict this type of violence as a way of mandating behavior on our own children.
Well, the conversation really needs to be had, because, you know, when people say I turned out fine, what does that really mean?
Right.
And what does it mean beyond our individual selves, but as a community? So I hear parents say, well, you know, if I don't beat my child, the cops will do it or they'll end up in prison. Well, if beating Black children has been so effective at keeping folks out of prison,
right,
or you know, killed by cops,
right,
how is that working for us? Why then are we having conversations about police brutality,
right,
and mass incarceration? Look at our communities. Look at, you know, all measures of life, health, wealth, education, right? You know, if whippings were a prerequisite for success, then Black people should be ruling the world right now.
We should. We should. We absolutely should. And apparently, we're getting back into another cycle. I am disturbed by this piece. I am disturbed by the support of this piece. Mm-hmm. And I am elated that you joined us. Folks, I brought Dr. Stacey on the air because I thought that in this conversation, I think it was important to have an expert, not just our opinions about how we feel about spanking, what happened to us, what we do. I think opinions are great. We need to also look at the research, the real long-term impact of this particular behavior on our
children.
And Dr.
K, let me just say this, too. because, you know, I hear a lot of myths surrounding this practice. There are people who have told me, well, you know, we've always done this. We bought this over from Africa. And I asked them, well, what evidence do you have to support that? These are the same folks who will claim they stole our religion. Mm. They stole our language. They stole our culture. They took everything, our names. But whipping our children was the one thing that survived the Middle Passage. When the majority of the captives who were brought over here on those ships were young people, teenagers and children, people who had not yet finished childhood, who had not yet parented. Whipping is one of the whitest things that we can do to destroy black children. It is not a practice that is native to our West African ancestors who saw our children as gods and reincarnated ancestors, right? That type of ritualistic coercion and fear and violation of children's bodily autonomy did not exist in those cultures. It didn't exist among the Native Americans. We have to understand that whipping children is a byproduct of slavery, colonialism, and our indoctrination into Christianity, because we didn't come here as Christians. West Africans were not reading Bibles and worshiping Jesus and saying, spare the rod, spoil the child. We weren't reading Bibles. So we need to, as a people, have to understand how these historical processes changed and altered black parenting practices, the way we worship, the way we look at children. We didn't believe that children were born in sin, right? These were Europeans who were doing this, who didn't even recognize that children were children until about, the 17th century, 16th, 17th right. century, while we were seeing our own kids as gods, not as property, right? We didn't have all these weird ideas about sinful behaviors. We weren't beating our kids for twerking and all that, rolling their eyes, because these were natural forms of communication with each other and to the gods.
Well, I'm going to open up for a couple of phone calls if you have some time, Dr. Stacy.
I got plenty of time.
So let's get some people in. People want to chime in on this. Folks, we are talking about this idea of corporal punishment, but we're talking about it from a different perspective. We're bringing in someone who can research and talk to us effectively about it, not just our opinion of just spanking out children and letting other folks do it, but about what this really does to us long term. We have Fred on the phone from Northeast Baltimore. Fred, how are you?
Hi, Dr. Kay.
How are you? Thank you for joining myself and Dr. Stacy.
Hi, Dr. Stacy.
Hello, sir.
I don't know, Dr. Stacy. I'm kind of befuddled about your saying that, you know, kids shouldn't be disciplined and beating them. And when I grew up, let me give you an example of something. When my generation, the mothers did most of the disciplining. If your father got to you, you really did something bad. But for the most part, your mother disciplined you. And personally, I think that's what's wrong with these kids out here today. No one disciplines them at all. They get away with everything because of what they do. No one's disciplining them. Now, corporal punishment, I mean, I'm not talking about take a baseball bat and whip your kid to death. But if you find your kid, I remember when we were kids, young person had having a plan with fire, playing with matches. Used to like to watch matches light. And the mother didn't burn his hand in the stove, but she put his hand close to the fire. Mm. He never did matches again. I mean, I do understand, you know, we don't want to be indoctrinated into these religious things, but we do have to figure out why is it that our kids are completely out of control and we seem to not know what to do about it. You're saying don't physically discipline them. So let's say don't beat them to death with a bat. But you have to do something to turn this ship around. You just can't say time out, because time out doesn't work. Would you agree?
No, I don't agree with anything that you said.
We can only have one person talk at the same time. Fred, I'm going to let Dr. Stacy answer because you asked her a question. Dr. Stacy?
Correct.
So let's start with the facts. Here. Number one, I never said don't discipline your children. Discipline means to teach. But when we hit children, what is it that we're teaching? We're teaching them that might is right, that hitting somebody is the appropriate way to communicate, to solve problems, and to get, you know, folks to do what you want them to do. You're communicating that violence is always an option. To your point that these kids today are completely out of control. But when we look at the data, juvenile crime rates have been falling for the past 20 years. School violence has actually been falling as well. Young people today are taking fewer drugs. Violent crime among juveniles is down. I mean, every category of statistics is actually...
Are you talking about the black community?
The data does not support this notion that young people today are out of control. Actually,
are you talking about the black community?
I'm talking about writ large. And then when we disaggregate by race, we have the same downward trends as well. So if you look at the data, support what you're saying, that these kids are so out of control. Let me make this last point, and then you can chime in. You also said the problem is that these kids are not being disciplined. But when we look at all the data, nearly 80% of American children are being hit by their parents. And it generally starts around age 2, before kids are even walking and talking good. White people and Latinos, around 70% by race, are using corporal punishment to discipline their children. African Americans, it has stayed steady at about 80%. So the majority of Americans are hitting their kids. The majority of black people are hitting their kids. So perhaps it's all that hitting that starts when these young people are toddlers, that's sowing aggressive behavior, that's not teaching them why they shouldn't be doing what they're doing, just teaching them fear and aggression. So then they go into the schools and they take out their frustration in classes or into the streets. Maybe it's the hitting that's causing the problem, because you cannot argue that 20% of kids who are not being hit at home are the ones who are causing all these problems.
Well, Fred, I'm going to have you make one more comment, then we'll go to the next caller. Go ahead, Fred.
Please do. I believe the statistics may hold up in some areas, but the generation in Baltimore that's creating the most havoc is now aged from 13 to about 18 to 19 years old. That's the kids, 20, 21, 20, that's out in the street shooting each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kids out in the street committing all these crimes. So for you to say, tell me that the crime rate is going down because we're not disciplining our kids?
I said among juveniles.
What about in the black community in Baltimore? What's going on here?
Now, I'm going to stop you there, Fred. Hold on. I'm going to let Fred. Thank you, Fred. I'm going to have you chime off. Dr. Stace, I'm going to have you go ahead and answer, Fred, because then I want to try to get another caller in here. Go ahead.
Once again, you know, it's myth-busting. When we look at the data, even on homicides in Baltimore, who's committing the majority of the homicides? They're not kids.
Right.
They're adults. There are adults who are doing this, and it leaves out discussion about divestment in school, you know, mass incarceration and its impact on black families and black
redlining.
Communities. Yeah, redlining, the violence of gentrification and poverty, right? We don't have those. We instead of striking back at those systemic, longstanding, historical, generations-long problems, instead we beat our kids. We have more, you know, courage to stand up and beat our kids down for, you know, exhibiting symptoms of all of this divestment than we do at the, you know, the authorities, the city structures, the legislatures who we don't hold accountable, our own leaders within our communities who are selling us out. We don't have the courage to stand up against them. So the way to solve or strike back against this powerlessness or these problems or these frustrations, you take it out onto our children.
All right, let's get some more calls on here. Yeah, I want to get some more calls in here. Hold on, Dr. Stace. I'm going to bring in Curtis. Curtis is calling from Northeast Baltimore. Curtis, I want to try to get your question in before the break, sir. How are you?
I'm good, Dr. K. How are you doing, Dr. K, Dr. Stacey?
Doing well,
hello.
Thank you.
All right. Now, I can agree with Dr. Stacey to a certain point. First, I wanted to ask her, where do you get your statistics from?
You can read my book. They're all in the footnotes.
Okay, so, all right, with that being said, let me just say, I think there's a distinct difference between punishment and abuse.
Okay.
Right? So I believe that you should, as an adult, correct your child, not only correct them, have the conversation or explain to them why they are being disciplined and why you're disciplining them. That's really a big difference between disciplining a child and abusing a child. I think I'm agree with the last caller when he said that, you know, the younger generation out here today, the younger 13 to 19, mm-hmm. are committing most of the crimes out here in the city, because there is a problem in our community when it comes to disciplining children. I think our children has picked up on the European children's way of living, as far as they feel like you as their adult or as their parent can't discipline them because it's against the law to discipline them.
Not against the law.
Okay. I'm going to stop you there, Curtis. Thank you so much. I'm going to have Dr. Stacy answer that before we go to break. So, Dr. Stacy, Curtis just laid a couple of things out, that there's this European notion that, you know, that parents can't discipline their children, that you have a bulk of these juveniles who are committing things. So I just wanted to have you kind of comment on that.
None of it is factual. None of it is factual. There's no law that says you can't hit your kid. Every single state in this country has a law that defines how you can appropriately strike a child's body, just as it once was legal for a husband to hit their wives. So children are the only group of people where it is still codified in law to be able to hit them. If you hit your child one way in Texas, you might not be punished for it, but if you use that same tactic in, say, Vermont, you might go to jail. So it varies by law. So it is absolutely not illegal to hit your kid. And as I said before, the majority of parents in this country are hitting their children. So this idea that, and I just, when we started this conversation, told you that 18 states allow corporal punishment in public schools. Every state except Iowa and New Jersey allows it in charter and private schools. So we are a butt-whipping country. The majority of American kids across race lines are growing up and being assaulted by adults. Period. And we have no data. All the data actually contradicts this idea that these kids today are worse off. Every generation has said that about their kids.
Right.
When I was growing up, and it's always funny to me, when I was growing up as an 80s and 90s kid, I was hearing adults saying,
"We're the worst.
Kids today have no respect, blah, blah, blah." And then my generation grow up, and now we're uttering the same thing.
Yes.
And it also makes me so sad to hear how black people speak the grammar of white supremacy when we talk about our kids. Right. Our kids especially are doing X, Y, right. and Z. And it's the same language they use to justify the school-to-prison pipeline for
police
shooting
brutality.
Unarmed kids.
Yes.
Yes, all of that. All
yes.
of that.
Well, that's something I think that we're trying to wrestle in. We have Andre who wants to chime in. Andre's a new caller from Baltimore. Andre, how are you? Welcome to the show and welcome to the family.
Hey, Dr. K. Hey, Dr. Patton.
Hello.
Thank you for taking the call. I just wanted to say the word discipline is a very charged word,
mm-hmm.
But it's really simple. Discipline is routine, pattern, mm-hmm. repetition, mm-hmm. and habit. Mm-hmm. And that translates into work.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to say we're lazy and we don't want to work.
Right.
There's just a new routine, a new habit, you know, and a new way of conditioning that's actually old, as Dr. Pat was mentioning, and that just really takes a time to look at what was our narrative, what was our culture, mm-hmm. you know, and what was our heritage. Because if you go to discipline in sports, it's repetition and routine.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate you for calling, Andre. Dr. Stacy, I'm going to ask you if you wouldn't mind holding on through the break. We have a couple people who want to chime in with you, if that's okay.
Yep, that's fine.
All right, folks, we're going to hold it here for just a moment. When we come back, it is the weekly wrap, but we've gotten into this interesting conversation, starting with this Georgia school and the corporal punishment and me being blown away. Thank you for that, Dr. Stacy, that so many schools across this country in charter and private schools are allowed to mete out corporal punishment other than Iowa and New Jersey. We're going to continue that conversation and whatever else you'd like to bring to the table when we return. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Stay here for a quick update from MTA, and we'll talk on the other side.